You have entered a comic exposure reheat. Please take care to put on protective gear to avoid third-degree burns. Comic Exposure Summer Reheat Event begins now.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my superfluous hip pouch, the one, the only, Travis Rance.
I put my chapstick somewhere. Here it is. Travis Rats here.
1,000 pockets is what we're talking about today. Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I
dive. You know I'm going to interrupt you after we do it, and we're going to talk about how we did on the intro. Is it a bandolier? What's the thing like Chewbacca wears?
Bandolier. A bandolier.
A bandolier.
Yeah. Yeah. So welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast, where Travis and I dive deep into graphic novels and trades. You are in the throes, I guess not the throes, the early tastes of reheat summer. This is the first bite, the second bite of the pizza right out of the microwave. You're like, dah, 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 gets you a little bit. The pepperonis are a little too hot. We are on our second book of Reheat Summer. Every summer, most summers, Travis and I try to do something different, change up our reading habits, pick a theme that we're working on. And that theme that we're working on this summer is the reheat summer. Travis and I made a list. You can go back and listen to it. We went through and said, hey, these are the books that we want to read the second volume of, because on this show, we end up reading a lot of volume ones. And so on this episode, Travis, we are reading Local Man, volume 2, sir. Tim Seeley, Tony Fleeks created and writing it. Art by Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley. Colors by Brad Simpson, Felipe Sobrero. And this was a book that you and I really enjoyed, volume one.
Recently.
And we enjoyed it enough to go like, all right, let's jump right back into it for Reheat Summer. Tell me a little bit about, refresh the memory, if folks haven't listened before, what Local Man is about.
Yeah, Local Man follows Jack Xavier, I believe, is our main character, who, did we talk about this last podcast? I didn't reheat the podcast. he was originally a character. Did he appear in the original, like, 90s Image run of comics?
I think he's wholly created out of this idea of third gen, this sort of fake...
Yeah.
Image Comics thing, and he's surrounded by, this is like an homage, a love letter to 90s Image that we're getting in this.
As the 90s Image era is long gone, this is kind of a reheat of that, honestly.
Inception that we're in right now.
Yeah, it's like, okay, let's go back. And we'll bring back some of those characters.
Yes.
Comics. We'll bring in amalgamations of what you'd expect to see in a 90s Image comics. And we'll create a new story that kind of follows a washed out Image 90s superhero. And that is our Jack Xavier. And he is no longer allowed to call himself by his superhero name Crossjack, as we found out in the volume one, because that's copyright by third gen. And he's forced to move back to his local town. And he's trying to kind of redeem himself. Like in volume one, it was all about him kind of confronting who he was, being like, oh, was I an a-hole? And in this one, it's like, okay, yeah, I was.
Yeah.
I think I am. How can I correct this? And his parents play a big part in that. His ex-girlfriend from like high school plays a part in it. There are plenty of pop-ups from his old days in third gen. So we're just kind of continuing Jack Xavier's story.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I found really interesting about the first volume we did of this, or one of the things I really enjoyed about the first volume and this volume, is this flip-flop back and forth between what are essentially like, one of the writers is like going like, hey, here's my art. This is this piece of it right now. This is modern. And then here's the flashback of the very 90s Image comic. Like the end of the issue is a very Image comic, like all the bits and beats of it looking like Jim Lee or Andrew or Liefeld, right? And then we get in this one some very 90s like indie flair in the background, looking a little like maybe 80s 90s Love and Rockets, or you know, that sort of thing that we're getting as we're following the story of his ex-girlfriend after he leaves his small town, right?
Yes,
so you get that
absolutely.
very 90s comic book look, but 90s indie where it's all black and white.
We'll talk about that art later. It's kind of part of the story, but we also get some Animal Man kind of style breaking the fourth wall and playing with panels on here, which when I got to, I was like, there were a couple of things in here. There's a big one with a character cameo we'll talk about at some point that I'm like, oh my gosh, Josh is gonna love this. And the playing of the Daffy Duck, right? The Chuck Jones Daffy gets played with breaking the fourth wall. Before we do that, let's kind of talk about like the story itself here. You kind of have a couple of little mini episodes as you're continuing to see Jack kind of ingratiate himself back into the town. And the first one here is Jack has to confront his time, his parallel universe time traveling. It's more parallel universe self, right? Which is something that we're familiar with in comics. It's been deconstructed before. But what was your take? This is our opening issue, having read Volume 1. You're coming back into this. You remember liking Volume 1.
I think... Oh, I lost you for a sec, Travis. Let's see if you're still there. You froze. StreamYard is letting us down, Travis. Nope. I had you, and then I lost you. Getting robot bleeps and bloops. There he is.
I'm gonna.
You know, I think one of the things that I really loved about it is also not only is it this sort of like send up of 90s comics, but also this what's going on in Marvel cinema, right? Like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, all these ideas of like time travel and multiverse and all these things, like playing with that idea of like we had to go forward in time for this big event, this line-wide event, it feels like is going on in Marvel, like in Image. And we see that played with again in another issue, this idea of like, how do we bring other, you know, this is like Image characters, like Boof and like Street Angel or other, all these different Image characters. And it's this big crossover event. And I think it's a really fun way to like go, hey, remember what this book was about? If you're a trade reader, and I think, you know, we've talked about this several times on the show, like comic books are now written for the trade. Right. This is a great like, oh, first arc is done. Here's a way to get you to remember what this book is about. Here's the second arc. Let's remember who these characters are. Let's remember the pitch. And then let's just play with the idea of Image Comics and bring all these characters from like these 90s characters into the present. Some of them are fake. Some of them are real, and have them sort of interact. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a hilarious way to kind of kickstart this book again in this first issue.
Yeah, it is really fun. And like all the things you're saying, it's not the first time this has been deconstructed, but he does it in a really cool way. He has to, his when he confronts his younger self just is kind of bummed out by the guy who he becomes. But
yeah,
it works like humor wise. There's a lot of humor in it, but also like it's a really telling story of what we do now as like 40-year-olds. We look back and it's like, hey, we can't time travel back and meet ourselves when we're 20 years old. But if we did, would we be ashamed of that person? Right. And especially when you can't tell them what's happened because it will create a time crisis. And just being annoyed by your past self and that reconfirming your new drive to change yourself and things like that. I thought it was a great start, and it really kicked in, because at first I started reading and I'm like, am I going to have to reheat this podcast? Because I don't remember really what the thing is with the Patriot Commando guy or whatever it was. I'm like, and then what did he do to the police officer again? How did he help him out? Why? And I was like, am I going to have to reheat this? But as I got through the first issue, I was like, no, I got enough of what's going on here.
Yeah. Exactly. And I love just sort of the, like, there's the final page. So then they fight Phantoma, I think is, I can't remember her name. I think that's what her name was. Yeah, Phantoma, who is a classic comic book character. I have that book somewhere. I have a collection of old comics written by this guy who did Phantoma. And then Phantoma got, it ended up being open that anybody could do it. What's it called when a property stops being trademarked or whatever?
Oh, like, public domain.
It's ended up being public domain. So Image has it. So she shows up. And I love that, like, there's all of these, there's a big giant, you know, scene where you've got Battle Pope and you've got Shadow Hawk and you've got Street Angel. And you have these Image characters who are real and some that aren't. And then I like that that issue just ends with the Local Man is trademark of these guys. Stryker is trademark of Top Cow, Todd McFarlane, Phil. It gives you this sort of like, hey, we own all of our characters. And to use these characters, they're trademarked and I got to pay these owners. Right. And I really like that idea of like celebrating and embracing what Image is and was and kind of playing with that. And I also like, you're right, Travis, it balances this funny thing and this serious sort of self-awareness and self trying to understand who you are as you get older and you change. And I think as two men in our, you know, at in our 40s, like that is a very serious thing, right? You're like, I can have fun with this comic and remember how dumb it was to be a kid and read this. But at the same time, like I have to, like, I'm questioning how terrible some of this was in the 90s, right? We talked about it before, like the way that women were drawn and done all of those things. Like, what does it look like now? I think you have to confront that. And I think that this book does a really great job of that in the entire time.
Yeah, he's really playing off, like you said, on multiple levels, this whole idea of nostalgia, not just nostalgia right. for the medium itself, but like nostalgia for the character's own past and trying to separate himself from that and what to keep and what to throw away. Now, I got to ask you, Josh, when you saw our character from Love Everlasting in here play a part in the story, were you like, oh, my gosh?
I thought it was great. I thought it was such a funny, like, I think, like, how can we incorporate these different Image comics and let's do a modern one? And I thought that was a great way to do like a modern, here's a modern Image character that kind of fits into this time travel thing that we're doing. I thought, like, and she's the reason why this event takes place, right? She's this, like, the nexus of the time travel thing. I'm like, oh, that's pretty funny. That's a really ingenious way to do it. This is a super creative book, man. I don't know how else to put it. I was curious after we finished volume one going like, how do you solve this mystery? Like, what does this look like? How do you like, okay, it's his ex-girlfriend. What do you do? And I think like this took the next chapter and did a much better job than I thought it would of pushing that mystery or pushing that story forward. I really enjoyed volume one, but the ending, I was like, okay, it's the girlfriend. How's that going to end? How do you make this villain villainous? And I thought it was a really good job to kind of play up, you know, the corporatization of superheroes and everybody wants to get their superpower. I really enjoyed that transition. What did you think of like how it carried the story on?
Yeah, I thought it was really great. And this is, again, this is a perfect example of why we're kind of going back, because oftentimes when you read a volume one with six issues, you're just getting the exposition of the character. Right. And this book is about him changing. And we have these ancillary characters like the parents who are very kind of the dad's very one dimensional kind of in volume one. It's just like the disapproving, disappointed dad. The ex-girlfriend is kind of just like the girl he left behind. It ends volume one with like, oh, there might be something more to her. But here in volume two, it's we really get to see these characters become more than just archetypes. I think that makes me want to read even more of it because it's not just like, okay, yes, I understand the premise. Yeah.
They're playing with the medium. You mentioned it earlier, this idea of this very sort of like, breaking the fourth wall, the animal man of it. And the whole thing where he goes to that camp and starts tripping out and he can grab the word balloons, and you know, all these different pieces are going on.
Josh.
Oh, yes. The really interesting piece of like breaking that fourth wall and doing all that, I think he's playing with a lot of different things in the medium. And I think that's a great, this is a story in a comic book where you can do that, where you can go like, what if we kind of break the fourth wall of ways that books were doing that before, but let's do it in our own thing, right? Like, how can we play with the medium, do these flashbacks that are in different art styles, do these different books that show different things, but just kind of continue to play with the medium. And that, I think, helps push this story along in a way that's more interesting than I thought it was. I mean, I thought it was interesting that first volume. And I was like, can we do more of the same? Can you lean into the same thing? But he changes it up enough. The two writers change it up enough, Tim Seeley and Tony Fleeks, to really give you sort of like a, let's play with the medium even more. Let's do something even more with this medium. And I think that makes this volume something worth coming back to, right? It's not a one-trick pony.
Let's talk about a couple of those moments and how they kind of execute them on here. So after we get past like the first issue on here, then we start kind of following a larger arc, right? There's a dead girl that turns up in town that was attached to his ex-girlfriend's organization, and the sheriff asks him to kind of help investigate without really investigating, and to do so he has to go to like this kind of like hippie cult that's moved in there, and he gets drugged. Right. So for like two or three of these issues, he's on like DMT. Right.
Yes.
And they take that opportunity. I mean, it's not the first time in a story, and certainly a comic book story, where a character goes on some sort of dream journey. Right.
Right.
That's when Josh was talking about how like he would melt off the panels, or he would jump out of the panel and into the margins on there because so it made sense with the story in the sense that he is tripping,
right? And
the way that they go in and kind of play with things, Josh at the very beginning of the podcast was talking about the art style and how it went back to into like kind of a Love and Rockets, more like 80s, 90s romance art style. And they use the ex-girlfriend's character as a way to completely change up the art style yet again and give us that, hey, she's the hero here. And like, oh, maybe she's not the hero here. And so every issue is really fun because this book is something where it's like, okay, it's six issues. I'm going to get to the store. I'm going to get this art style. It's like, you really don't know what to expect.
Right.
When you and me digitally turn the page and I'm like, okay, what's his kind of, it's almost like he has a mandate to himself to put something that is new and interesting into each issue that we might not have seen before.
Well, I think what you get is you have two writer artists who get to play with the medium, and they get to bounce off each other's style and each other's writing style and each other's art style to really give you something that we don't see in comics very often, right? And I think, you know, there's a couple books I've read where you've got multiple artists on it that are used intentionally, not the sort of like, oh man, we need a fill-in artist. Like why The Last Man, we get like, hey, we got to fill in artists. Okay, do a closed story flashback for an issue, right? We had just reheated
Preacher,
and I started reading volume 3, and it starts off with the Saint of Killers, and it's like three issues of that with completely different artists telling that story, right? Hey, this artist needs to break. So let's do something else so the art style fits what we're doing. This is intentionally like within the same issue, you know, there's like one part where it ends up being like, this panel is this guy, this panel is this guy, this panel is this type of art. And I think that is such a, it's a thing that you can only do in comics, right? I guess I think when I think of like doing it in film, it's that Spider-Man movie, right? It's like Into the Spider-Verse that you get to do all those different art styles within one film. But I really do love like the idea of like, no, this panel is this, so let's have this set up this and this do that. I think it's a really creative way of one telling the story that's about the past and the present and grappling with those things and how we see ourselves in the past. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just playing with the medium. I think it's incredibly creative and fun. And I, you know, I really liked volume one and I was like, I don't know if it's going to carry the same for me, but I think this is an even better six issues. I really enjoyed this. I thought it carried the story along better, you know?
Absolutely. I think this is not that the first volume was bad. It just, this is just much more interesting and woven into there. And it, even with them taking liberties with like art and like backstories and jumping back through time, it's paced really well. I didn't feel like, oh my God, are we still in this mind trip? Oh my gosh, are we still in this flashback? Oh my God, are we still in this parallel universe? It felt like it was moving along, and it's not a long read. Like you get through it fairly quickly. You can get through this in one sitting.
I think I read it in one night. I was like, okay, we're going to do this book. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to bed. I'm just going to finish this volume. Right.
Yeah. I think that was kind of the same with the first one too. It was a really quick read here. Is there anything in here that would maybe possibly keep you from not, you know, hitting, the next volume when it comes out?
I think, although I think the six issues is better than the first six issues, not that the first one was bad. I think this is a really good continuation of the story. I think I like the things outside of the main thread better than the main thread of the story, if that makes sense, right? Like I don't really find that like the corporatization of superpowers and the, hey, who wants to the highest bidder to get yourself this version of the superpowers. I don't find that interesting. I'm not interested by that. I'm interested by all of the other beats. And so if there were anything that were going to keep me from going into volume three, because I think that's an interesting part about Reheat Summer is this, again, this story's not over, right? So am I interested in the next volume or the next set of issues? Yes, but not because of the main thread.
Right, it's kind of almost like in James Bond, you're not interested in like the Spectre stuff, like the shadowy organization. You're like, no, I want to see Bond against like the task of the movie,
right?
And not have like the panel of corporate shadowy figures come in and be ominous about what's controlling all of this, right?
Yeah.
And I agree with that as well. What Josh is talking about specifically in the story is, there are some higher powered villainous figures that were attached to some of the characters in the first volume who seem to be using superheroes like his former fourth gen team, like their blood for things or like their powers for things. And so that feels kind of like already really trod territory for this genre. But at the same time, because they've shown such abilities to kind of twist things in new fun ways.
Yeah.
I'm curious if they have a big twist for what feels like the nostalgic trope of shadowy figures that we would see in Image Comics.
Yeah. Like I said, the writing is great. The dialogue is great. The art is fantastic. Even the flashbacky stuff is like, all of it's really, really good. But I think like, and I even like the water villain that's in here, that idea of like this past character, you know, who's been stuck and is coming back, like, and has to be that connection that's made between, Jack and her. I'm like, oh, that's good. That's good writing. This idea, just the thing that I don't care about is the ex-girlfriend's villainy of like, I'm going to save the town by selling superpowers, right? Like, that's the part that I'm like, I don't care about that. But man, is the character arc of Crossjack, like becoming aware of the shitty human being he was and like, how do I fix that? How do I repair this? Like the scene with his dad and like, I'm like, oh man, he was finally realizing that he's got to be better to his dad because he was kind of a jerk. And now, you know, that whole thing being taken from him, I'm like, okay, this is good stuff, man. It is really well written. It's not the A plot. It's everything else, you know?
Well, I want to kind of defend something I like about the A plot on that, because that does involve the ex-girlfriend a lot. And when we're looking at kind of thematically there, I do like her as an exploration of, so these superheroes, they grow up in these small towns and then they go, they don't save their community. They go out and then they do big things to save the world, big events and stuff like that. And she's left behind, right? And then, so she really doesn't have any options. If she's going to save something, she has to save things locally. And then, like so many people want, I mean, you see this in education all the time, right? Is the sense that someone really has good intentions, but once, in order to get things moving, they have to align themselves with powers that kind of corrupt them. And I kind of like that. It's where she's thinking very locally and not globally, but she's come across the, you know, that thing that often happens when you are trying to do good and be altruistic. So it's almost like they're coming from two different spectrums. He was global and that has to be local, and she's local and found herself being attached to something very global.
And they're kind of
cross-jacking in the middle.
But you know, let's kind of out of all of the let's talk about all the new characters that pop up in here, right? Because this is filled with people. Which one did you find, you know, the inset was the funnest, or you're like, oh, that's funny, I really like that extra character? Which one did you find the most interesting that's sort of like set up in this book?
Well, we had to make a little location change up here, and in doing so, I left my iPad up there so you can help me out with some of the names. You mentioned the guy earlier, the little troll guy.
Yeah, Boof,
the first issue. Boof, yes. And Boof, it's great. His character design is great. It's like a cross between like Beast, Wolverine, and Batmite. But it's basically you take a giant troll ogre character and you shrink him down into it, a smaller size. And the name for me is so 90s, Boof.
And it's apparently it is a real trademark character of Todd McFarlane. So he showed
I didn't look at it, and it does feel like something that would show up in a Spawn issue, like a Hell Minion or something like that. I didn't look at it, but I was like, no, it's too specifically 90s image to just be made up, right? And honestly, in reading this, I asked myself that a lot. I'm like, are all these shown up somewhere before, or some of them have? And I'm like, should I look that up? And I'm like, you know what? Let's not look it up. Let's enjoy the ones you remember, like the Ripclaw, you know, or the guy with the three arms and stuff like that. And then just kind of speculate about the ones you think might be created, because there were a ton of Image comics in the 90s, and I did not read all of them, and I didn't read them all for very long. So I'm sure there were thousands of characters that appeared in a panel or two that these guys are just tugging on and bringing into here. Do you have a favorite?
I really, Boof was funny. And one of the reasons it's funny is he feels so, so 90s, right? He had his own comic, not very many issues in the 90s, Boof comic. And he was also, he was in Youngblood. So he was in Youngblood.
Oh, big team.
Yeah. And so he is a time traveling, out of time caveman created by Todd McFarlane. Showed up in the Image series Boof, which was a, I don't know, six issues, something like that, which is just hilarious to me. And there's a one scene where he comes out of the gas station and he's chewing on, he's like blowing a bubble and it's a condom. And to me, I'm like, that's the most 90s thing that you could put. Because it feels very much like a joke you would see in Youngblood, or you would see that I wouldn't have gotten when I read it at 10 years old or 11 years old, but other people would have gotten, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like if you watch the old Masters of the Universe, like Gildor, the little troll guy, the cosmic key.
Oh, yeah. What is this bubblegum? You know,
yeah, and just, grilled oil, so it's a condom.
it's very much like, it feels so 90s. I thought that was really funny. You had mentioned it earlier. I did like the idea of throwing in, you know, Love Everlasting. Seeing Battle Pope was funny, right? Like, those are like those little nods to like, hey, this is Image, and we're really going to mess with you because some of these characters are real and some of them we've made up. And good luck trying to figure out which is which, because there were so many characters in all of those stories in the 90s, right?
Well, in the Love Everlasting one, it's like that was the whole, her kind of blip ability to blip out universes was the whole premise, like the, how it all got started on there. And they didn't really address that in like one line. Oh, there's a girl, when she falls in love, you know, worlds die. And, you know, or worlds end or stuff like that. And you're like, oh, I know that because I read that first volume, right. But how does the casual reader know this? And does
it
matter?
Right? They don't. And I think that that's kind of the fun part about it is they're like, hey, here's an Easter egg. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. Right. Like, we're just putting it in here.
What's a character we haven't seen yet in volume one or volume two that you remember from your Image childhood that when, if you turn the page and they were in a panel,
I want the two detectives from Spawn to show up. I want the two detectives with the big guy and the skinny Sam and Twitch to show up. Like, I just want them to be assigned the case or something, a case next to it. Right.
Like so seven, they're like, they're like, what's like, Sam's like, what's in the box?
I just want, that would be great. That would be a throwback that I think would be fantastic. It'd be fun to see a little Savage Dragon. Right.
I didn't even think about that one. I want Danger Girl in there.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be good. Those are the things I think would be, that would just be a fun goof, right? I think, and you can do.
I think you're going to see him in there. I think you're going to see some of those guys in there for sure.
I hope so, right?
They're creator owned. So like, if you want like Savage Dragon there, you have to get like Eric Larson's permission, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think he's doing. Yeah.
I'm gonna throw. Yeah,
he's doing some. Yeah, he's doing such a good job with it. I'm sure these Image creators, I'm sure they like the spirit of the book.
Yeah,
I'm sure they like us enjoy the writing and the art of the book. And so, if he Sealy were to come to them and be like, "Hey, can we use this?" I mean, especially if it's just kind of like a pop in, pop out, probably be no problem.
I loved just to kind of like some bits and pieces the. You know, I'm reading these digitally. We got all of the alternate covers in the back, right? Like, hey, here's the cover gallery of different covers. There's you remember Youngblood with the blood on the cover? Do you remember that one where they did a version of that? I thought that was great. Like, one of the alternate covers was with the blood on it, that black and white with the pink on it. There was one that had the Max kind of font on it, right? That's sort of like, the Max. I thought that was fun. It's a blast kind of going back, but not having to read those old.
Exactly.
Because,
we tried that. We did it with Spawn.
We read Spawn and I was like, man, I don't think I could do this. I would be curious to go back and read like Wildcats or go back and read Youngblood, just one volume, just to see if I could do it.
I was always a big fan of this Grifter's aesthetic.
I'm tempted to go back and read it after this and be like, man, to go back and read Savage Dragon, something I haven't read in forever, right? Just to be curious, like, does it hold up? Is my reverence for it as like, ooh, that was prime comics as my youth? Does any of it hold up? And
I don't think it holds up.
I don't think it would. I don't think it would either.
I mean, if we had a hard time with Spawn and that was like top tier 90s Image, I can't imagine what going back for some Youngbloods or, you know, Wildcats or Witchblade. Oh, that's top cow.
That is top cow. You're probably right. All right, Travis, anything you want to share as we wrap up our discussion of Local Man Volume 2?
No, except for the fact that this, I know we did a Preacher last episode, and that was one that I'd already read the entire series. So this is kind of my first foray into the, okay, let's really reheat it.
Yeah.
And the experience of being like, oh, I don't know what happens next. And it was, I was kind of wondering, like, is this going to work? Is this, do we have anything to talk about it? But will I, more importantly, will I enjoy it?
Yeah.
So far, I'm liking it.
That's right. Hey, I was able to give, you know, Preacher a little love that I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that two of these in a row, we're like, okay, I'm glad we're doing this. This is good, right?
Yeah.
Next episode, we are diving into a volume one of Green Arrow by James Grell. We read Longbow Hunters was
the prelude prequel to it.
So we read that. And now we're reading volume one of it, one of my favorite runs. And so it'll be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, you get to be on the other side, like for the Preacher one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Travis, I think that's it. Folks, you can find us on the internet, comicexposure.com. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you're sticking with us through Reheat Summer. Read along with us. Most of these things, you can find all of this stuff digital. We're not getting anything wild or crazy. And we'll see you next trade.